Chapter 48. The First Lowering. The phantoms, for so they then seemed, were flitting on the other side of the deck, and with a noiseless celerity were casting loose the tackles and bands of the boat which swung there. This boat had always been deemed one of the spare boats, though technically called the captain's on account of its hanging from the starboard quarter. The figure that now stood by its bows was tall and swart, with one white tooth evilly protruding from its steel-like lips. A rumpled Chinese jacket of black cotton funereally invested him, with wide black trousers of the same dark stuff. But strangely crowning this ebonness was a glistening white-plated turban, the living hair braided and coiled round and round upon his head. Less swart in aspect, the companions of this figure were of that vivid tiger-yellow complexion peculiar to some of the aboriginal natives of the Manilas, a race notorious for a certain diabolism of subtlety, and by some honest white mariner supposed to be the paid spies and secret confidential agents on the water of the devil, their lord, whose counting room they supposed to be elsewhere. While yet the wondering ship's company were gazing upon these strangers, Ahab cried out to the white-turbaned old man at their head, "All ready there, Fadallah?"
"Ready," was the half-hissed reply.
"Lower away, then, do you hear?" shouting across the deck. "Lower away there, I say!" Such was the thunder of his voice that, spite of their amazement, the men sprang over the rail. The sheaves whirled round in the blocks. With a wallow, the three boats dropped into the sea, while, with a dexterous off-handed daring unknown in any other vocation, the sailors, goat-like, leaped down the rolling ship's side into the tossed boats below. Hardly had they pulled out from under the ship's lee when a fourth keel, coming from the windward side, pulled round under the stern and showed the five strangers rowing Ahab, who, standing erect in the stern, loudly hailed Starbuck, Stubb, and Flask to spread themselves widely so as to cover a large expanse of water. But with all their eyes again riveted upon the swart Fadallah and his crew, the inmates of the other boats obeyed not the command. "Captain Ahab," said Starbuck.
"Spread yourselves," cried Ahab. "Give way, all four boats. Thou, Flask, pull out more to leeward."
"Aye, aye, sir," cheerily cried little King Post, sweeping round his great steering oar. "Lay back," addressing his crew. "There, there, there again.
There she blows right ahead, boys. Lay back. Never heed yonder yellow boys, Archie."
"Oh, I don't mind them, sir," said Archie. "I knew it all before now. Didn't I hear him in the hold? And didn't I tell Cabaco here of it? What say you, Cabaco? They're stowaways, Mr. Flask."
"Pull, pull, my fine hearts alive. Pull, my children, pull, my little ones,"
drawlingly and soothingly sighed Stubb to his crew, some of whom still showed signs of uneasiness.
"Why don't you break your backbones, my boys? What is it you stare at? Those chaps in yonder boat? Tut, there are only five more hands come to help us. Never mind from where, the more the merrier. Pull, then, do pull, never mind the brimstone. Devils are good fellows enough. So, so, there you are now. That's the stroke for £1,000. That's the stroke to sweep the stakes. Hurrah for the gold cup of sperm oil, my heroes. Three cheers, men, all hearts alive. Easy, easy, don't be in a hurry, don't be in a hurry. Why don't you snap your oars, you rascals? Bite something, you dogs. So, so, then, softly, softly. That's it, that's it. Long and strong. Give way there, give way. The devil fetch you, you ragamuffin rapscallions. You're all asleep. Stop snoring, you sleepers, and pull. Pull, will you? Pull, can't you? Pull, won't you? Why, in the name of gudgeons and ginger cakes, don't you pull? Pull and break something. Pull and start your eyes out. Here," whipping out the sharp knife from his girdle, "every mother's son of you, draw his knife and pull with the blade between his teeth. That's it, that's it. Now you do something. That looks like it, my steel bits. Start her, my silver spoon. Start her, marling spikes."
Stubb's exordium to his crew is given here at large because he had rather a peculiar way of talking to them in general, and especially in inculcating the religion of rowing. But you must not suppose from this specimen of his sermonizings that he ever flew into downright passions with his congregation. Not at all. And therein consisted his chief peculiarity. He would say the most terrific things to his crew in a tone so strangely compounded of fun and fury, and the fury seemed so calculated merely as a spice to the fun, that no oarsman could hear such queer invocations without pulling for dear life, and yet pulling for the mere joke of the thing.
Besides, he all the time looked so easy and indolent himself, so loungingly managed his steering oar, and so broadly gaped, open-mouthed at times, that the mere sight of such a yawning commander, by sheer force of contrast, acted like a charm upon the crew. Then again, Stubb was one of those odd sort of humorists, whose jollity is sometimes so curiously ambiguous as to put all inferiors on their guard in the matter of obeying them.